Security in this office park is a joke. Last year, I came to work with my spud gun in a duffel bag. I sat at my desk all day with a rifle that shoots potatoes at 60 pounds per square inch. Can you imagine if I was deranged?
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Weiss and Nick here with you. Ethan
won't be here today. Ever since, you know, he became a dad, he's been slacking with this podcast game. I've been a dad for over a year now, and I'll never miss an episode, especially not one like this. I guess you can say some of us are built different, Nick, maybe?
Not really. I don't have any children, thankfully. I'm fine.
Not yet, but I'm assuming you won't miss an episode like this if you do have a kid one day.
Possibly.
Anyways, we'll see. The Giants draft. A lot of positives to discuss. Let's get into it. We talked about the first round pick, Deontay Banks from Maryland, last week, but had a couple days to digest, let things settle, emotions out the window. I'm still very happy with day two. It was a special, special night for the Giants. So let's get right into it. And I'll start real quick because I've been practicing this monologue in the shower the last like three nights. In preparation for this, and I want to preface by saying this, that I've taken emotions out of it, right? Like, it's no more hype. This is just an honest opinion with no emotions involved. And I wish Ethan was here, because a year ago we talked about process versus results, and he had a great analogy about right process, wrong process, right results, wrong results. But the NFL draft, when we discuss it and we talk about it and we analyze it and we get excited about it, it's about the process. We don't know the results yet. You draft a player number one overall, you don't know if that player is going to be great or not. So when we're discussing the Giants and we're excited about what they did, it's because they have the right process, and it sort of piggybacks off of what they did in free agency. Where it's like, hey, our process was not, we need a receiver, let's go throw money at the two best guys on the market, even though it's a weak wide receiver class. That would have been the wrong process. That was the process of the Giants in the past, where they just throw money at the problem. They don't evaluate whether the player is a fit or not. They don't evaluate whether the player is worth it or not. They just base everything on the fact that they have this need and they have money to throw at the problem. Anyways, the draft. Day two. Coming into it, we knew that the Giants had three glaring holes, right? It was cornerback, it was wide receiver, and it was interior offensive line, specifically center. They handled the cornerback position on day one. What do they do on day two? You have to go back to last season's draft. And if you remember correctly, the Giants obviously had two top 10 picks, number five and number seven. But what was their plan? What did they want to do? Well, they wanted to use the number five pick on a player and then take that number seven pick and trade it and accumulate more picks, because they knew they had a depleted roster. They had limited cap space to work with. They needed to build depth on that roster. They needed players. They needed to get younger and cheaper. They weren't able to do that, so they took two cornerstone players, right? Evan Neal, Kayvon Thibodeau, we hope they work out. We were hoping that they do work out. But what did they do in the second round? Second round, they came in. Joe Shane said, I need more picks. They took that high second round pick and turned it into multiple picks down the road. I think they got a fourth round pick, and then they traded down again and got a fifth round pick. Or am I getting mixed up? The process was what? We like a lot of players in round two. We're comfortable moving back, accumulating more picks, getting younger, getting cheaper, adding more bodies, building depth. That was the plan last year. That was the process. Again, the jury's still out. Let's see what Wandell Robinson is. Obviously, Evan Neal, he needs to take a big step forward. Kayvon Thibodeau, we got some clarity. We think he's going to be a very good player. So fast forward to this year. We're entering day two. What's the talk about the Giants? You need a center. The centers are all there. No centers won in the first round. You need a receiver. We saw what happened right before the Giants were picking at 25 or 24. Wide receivers went off the board. The Giants had to go get that corner because they believe there was a big drop off after Deontay Banks. Day two comes. Round two, they're patient. Who do they get? They get potentially the best center in the draft in John Michael Smith. Great pick. Again, when value meets need, it's better than sex. It's the best feeling in the world. This is a plug and play, day one, practice one, OTA one, starting center for the New York Giants, hopefully for the next 10 years. Again, we'll wait on the results, but the process was correct. Round three, you're sitting there and you're starting to see some of these receivers fall. One particular, Jalin Hyatt, top 30 visit. Giants did work on him. Obviously takes the top off the defense. A guy that I said I would have been comfortable taking at 25, get in the third round. Again, incredible value. Fills a need. They need receivers. So when you talk about Jalin Hyatt, right, he brings speed. That's the one thing the Giants wanted to add. Do I think Jalin Hyatt is going to be a bona fide wide receiver one? I hope so. I'm not going to bank on it, but I think he can be a really good player for the Giants. Again, we'll wait on the results. Let's look at the process. The process was they saw him fall. They have extra picks at their disposal. And just like they did with Deontay Banks, they did with Jalin Hyatt. You go and get your guy. We saw the process last year was accumulate more picks to build depth, to get more options, to get younger and to get cheaper. This year was like you have certain guys that fill big needs, big holes in your roster. Go get them. You have conviction with your pre-draft evaluation, how you rank your board and all that. Go get it. The process for the Giants was smooth. There's a couple of things else that make this process work. Number one, philosophical alignment. I've said it about 3 million times on this podcast. When you have a coaching staff and a front office that philosophically aligned, you see those bear hugs that Wink Martindale gave Joe Shane. You saw Joe Shane admit that it was Brian Daboll working the phones to make that trade up for Jalin Hyatt. All these things are signs of what a team that has the right process. These are all signs of what a team that has the right process looks like. When you see that excitement, when you see the gelling, when you see that alignment, that they know what they need, they know what type of prospect they're looking for to fill these needs. And I think that is the most, the biggest takeaway for me, again, is once again, we're seeing the Giants execute with the right process. And now the hope is when you have the right process, you get the right results. That you hit on some of these picks, these players develop, and you continue to build your roster, you continue to improve.
It's really encouraging because for a while, the Giants kind of spent the draft forcing it where they had so many glaring holes in their roster that they were going to always take the position that they needed at whatever pick because they wanted to fill the gaps with day one guys. They weren't put in a position to succeed. Consistent coaching turnover made guys kind of irrelevant once a new coaching staff came in, which is something that kind of gets lost, which is why it's so important you have that alignment now between the coaching staff and the front office, because now there's a clear long-term plan where they're gradually building this thing up over a number of years. They're establishing a foundational group of guys to build around that are going to be hopefully the backbone of the team for the next 5 to 10 years. And that's really your starting point. Of course, you got to put the work in. It's great that you draft these guys, but talent just gets you into the NFL. Once you get there, there's still a lot of development and growth that needs to happen, especially for the guys round three and on. Those are guys who are going to be filling out the bottom half of your roster. Hopefully, we know how bad the Giants have been with keeping guys they've drafted after, you know, 3 to 5 years. Most of the bottom half of those drafts not in the league anymore or on completely different teams. You look at drafts from 4 and 5 years ago, there's a lot of draft picks or with other organizations are just completely out of the NFL. And that's going to happen on those lower half of the draft guys. But you've got to be very encouraged. The process really does matter. And it sets you up. Because if you hit on a handful of these guys at the right positions, like if Neal and Andrew Thomas are your bookend tackles for the next 10 years, you've got a center to line up with them for the next 10 years, that's a great starting point. Because then you got to worry about two guards. You think you might have your quarterback. That's a great starting point. You bring in Jalin Hyatt. You bring in some of these guys where you're going to take flyers on guys. That's the good thing they've done in free agency. agency is they haven't tied up a lot of money in anyone. They've brought in guys who are here for opportunities to get playing time. And those are the guys who maybe a Paris Campbell can finally stay healthy, has a really good year as a complimentary piece, and all of a sudden you've got a guy in-house to solve your receiver issues. But everything is set up for success. Playing the games is another story. You feel really good about the coaching staff based on how last season went. You think about the production they got out of guys who they brought in off of the street or in training camp off of other rosters that got cut, and they got to the second round of the playoffs. Now you start giving these guys toys to play the game the way they want to. Now you think that, hey, maybe we don't need to run the ball 35 times a game the first 8 weeks of the season. We can drop back and throw 35, 40 times because we have a Jalin Hyatt, we have a Paris Campbell, we have a Darius Slayton, we have an Evan Ingram. I'm drunk. We have a Darren Waller. I was thinking tight end wearing 83. We have a Darren Waller. We have Bellinger. There's a lot to feel good about in terms of how they're laying this out. Playing the games is another story, but your process works. You feel really good about the coaching staff. That's all the front office can do. If the roster is set up for success and it doesn't execute, okay, then we can worry about that when we get there. But for now, they are taking all of the steps to become a consistently stable team. And that doesn't mean Super Bowl contender. That means the floor is never going to be that low. And that's really a good starting point because you have your established building block pieces you love, you really feel strongly about, and then you can tinker in and fill in around them. That's your goal of the draft, is that's where you get your impact guys. It is really hard to get key pieces in free agency. You can do it in trades, but you have to have assets to give up in trades. And right now the Giants aren't in a position to be giving up a lot of assets for established players already. So building through the draft is the way to go. You like what they're doing. You feel good about what they're doing. It's not like you're having to talk yourself into this, like where we've kind of had to in years past. We're like, hey, maybe this will work. No, I think what they've done is going to work. They've got a good complimentary corner to go opposite Adoree Jackson. He works his way up. And if Adoree doesn't come back, that's your new CB1. You've got an out of the box day one center. You've got your bookend tackles center established. You've got guards you drafted the last 2 years, like Josh Azudu. Maybe he steals one of the guard spots. You've still got Ben Bredesen hanging around. You hope that works out. You got Jones. The running back position, we can figure out down the road. That's not as important, but you feel good about the direction of the team. And the process is the best indicator of what the front office is actually thinking. It's very infrequent that you get an honest account because, you know, they have to play the game. When they're talking to the media, they can't be as forthcoming as they are. The process is when you understand what a front office is thinking. And I feel really good about what Joe Shane and the boys in the front office are cooking right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think specifically on the offensive line, in the last 2 years, number 7 pick on a right tackle, number 67 pick, Josh Azudu, on a guard, number 57 on a center. These are pretty significant investments on your offensive line. Adding to the fact that you've inherited Andrew Thomas, that should be 4 or 5 spots. And then, you know, obviously you went out and signed Mark Lewinsky. So the investments were there. The process was that, like, they were going to make significant investments in their offensive line when they got here. Now it's about the development and seeing the results, seeing the flowers blossom, as they say. But, you know, Joe Shane's ability to maneuver in the draft, to gather intel, to understand not just his surroundings or, like, you know, what the Giants are doing, but to know what's going around the league is so important. And it's helping the Giants understand, like, okay, I like this guy. I'm going to go get him because I think, or I have intel that another team might be getting ready to do the same thing. Whereas in years past, where we saw the Giants fall in love with Devontae Smith and the Eagles jump him, the Giants fall in love with Leonard Floyd and Jake Conklin and get jumped by Tennessee and Chicago. You know, and then even in 2015, they really liked Amari Cooper. They really liked some of those guys that went ahead of them, and they get stuck with Ereck Flowers, or they get stuck with Eli Apple. Where it's like an inability to maneuver in the draft, not just with guys getting ahead of you and taking people that you like, but your inability to then say, okay, I need to move back. I need to understand the draft board. I need to understand that I might be high on Eli Apple,
but the teams picking behind me might not be. I might be high on Eric Flowers, but the teams picking behind me might not be. I can go back four or five spots. Or I got these two guys that are very similar. I can move back a couple spots, play the probability game, and get one of those guys. I think that's so important, and it's something that I've harped on really since 2018 when they took Barkley with number two overall, where I was like, if you understand how to maneuver your way in the draft, not just by making sure you get the right quality of picks so you don't give up too much, but understanding what teams around you are doing and want, it goes a long way. Roster building, they say it's not a science, it's an art. Well, it is that, because there's so many intangibles to it. It's not just sitting down in a room and watching film for 8 hours. No. There's so much more to that. It's almost like you're playing a game of poker, really. I think Brandon Bean said that recently on a podcast, where he's like, you know, you might have five or six guys that you really, 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 really like, but you got to understand that, you know, what's separating you and that player is 31 other teams, because any one of those 31 other teams could be ready to come up and get that player, and they could bamboozle you and just completely throw you off your game. And we've seen that happen with the Giants in the past with their GMs, where they've been bamboozled, where they've probably taken a guy way too high than he was supposed to go. But what we've seen these last 2 years with the Giants is just a GM that has a clear understanding of, okay, it's not just about evaluating. It's not just about, you know, where guys rank on my board. It's like, what's going on around me? What's going on with the three teams picking ahead of me? What's going on with the five teams picking behind me? That is very important. And I think it goes a long way in roster building, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. And you see it all the time. Think about what happened to the Jets in the draft on Thursday night, where they were clearly going to take that offensive tackle and the Patriots jumped them. And that, not the Patriots, excuse me, somebody jumped the Jets. They were completely out of whack. The Steelers jumped the Jets to take that tackle. And the Jets kind of looked around and like, oh, shit, what were we supposed to do? And they ended up taking a guy 20, 30 picks ahead of where he was projected in most mocks. And look, that guy, McDonald, might end up being okay, but the Jets could have traded back and gotten a pick or two back and still got the guy they wanted. So it's really important you're able to read the board, and it's really important you're able to play the game. That's the part of the draft process that it's all smoke and mirrors, and there's a lot of conjecture. Everybody is talking to everybody, floating things out there, trying to push agendas for their own advantage. When reporters get scoops, that's not out there for like the benefit of the reporter. A team is giving that information to a reporter so that it gets reported, so it can put some pressure on other teams to try and make decisions. That's all part of this game. I was reading earlier, I forget whose column it was, that the Giants were trying to move up to take Zay Flowers. That wasn't able to materialize, and they ended up feeling, okay, we can't get one of the receivers we really like right now. That's fine. But we want one of the corners we feel really good about. We think Banks is our guy. Let's go up and get him just to be safe. There was an outside chance Dallas was going to take him at 25 after the Giants trade up. Just take care of your business. That's the good thing about this. You see a clear-cut plan. It wasn't like, oh, what do we do? It was, okay, this happened. Well, we can go to this because we've accounted for this. That's what I like about this front office, is there's a clear-cut plan, and then there's a contingency plan if the original plan doesn't work out. Like last year, for example, they were really high on Sauce. The Giants thought that, hey, if he's there, we're going to take him. The Jets took him the pick before they did. Okay, we like all of these tackles. We would be comfortable with any of them at seven. So let's take the best. Let's take the pass rusher we really like that we think could be special. And then whichever tackle is left, we're going to be happy with them too. It's a good understanding of the board and the game, because every draft board is different. Every year is different. As the executives around you change, you have to get a different read. But for now, I feel really good about the draft process, and it's not a science. The draft is not, there is not a science to this. There is not, even if you go by the formulas for like pick value and stuff, there is not a science to this. You can accumulate as many draft picks as you possibly want, and everybody loves to have a bunch of draft picks. But once you actually turn those draft picks into something, then you actually have to do something with them. That's why draft picks are both really enticing and also dangerous, because you fall in love with the draft picks, you just keep accumulating picks. You end up like the Thunder and the Rockets, who have a million first-round picks in the NBA, but they don't actually have anything to show for all the draft picks they have. That's the other part of it. It's great you got great value. It's great you really like these guys. But you feel good about the front office and the coaching staff linking up. You saw how excited Wink was to get Deonte Banks on this team. There's a clear-cut understanding between the two. We're bringing in guys to fill specific roles. We want to play the way our coaching staff wants to play, so let's find guys that can do what they want us to do. It's exciting. It's genuinely – I was shocked Jalen Hyatt was there in the third round. I was fully accepting that, hey, they're probably going to end up taking a project receiver in like the fourth or fifth round, probably won't play. Jalen Hyatt's going to play. He might not get a ton of snaps out of the gate, but by midseason, he should be playing a good 30, 40% of the snaps with game-breaking speed. And that's something I forget who made – I think it was Darius Slayton that made the joke on Twitter that was like, stop making jokes about wanting to see us in the 4x100. Now we're fast. It's true. You got Banks in there. You got Jalen Hyatt in there. You got Saquon in there. You got Slayton. You got real speed on this team now for the first time in a while. That was the stinging indictment of the Giants last year, both on offense and defense. They were a slow team. They could not run sideline to sideline. Teams killed them horizontally. Now you've got real speed that gives you opportunities to make plays, and that's awesome.
One of the things is when I tweeted this back in March was like, separation is not going to be an issue for the Giants receivers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and I think what we're going to see is a completely different offense next season, because I think a lot of what they did offensively catered to what they had. Now where they've been able to go another full off season, adding players that fit what they want to do. It's a lot of speed, man. Darius Slayton, Jalen Hyatt, Darren Waller, Paris Campbell, even the guy Jeff Smith that they got from the Jets on a one-year deal. I mean, just guys.
Okereke?
Yeah, Bobby Okereke replaces a guy like Jalen Smith who just, I mean, God bless him, but he just looked finished, right, last year. I mean, it was slow. All these decisions, there's a word that I can, or a phrase that I came up with while you were talking, and it's called collective conviction. Everybody's on the same page, Nick. There isn't one. I mean, obviously, there's some guys, the coaches are going to like a certain player. But in terms of what their needs are and what kind of players they're looking for, there's a clear-cut understanding. And there was a clip going around about Daboll being a little bit upset about, I think, the Eric Gray thing with the running back, where maybe he wanted a different player. That kind of stuff doesn't bother me because – obviously, there are going to be times where you want a guy more than another guy. What I'm basically trying to explain to everyone is they're collectively convinced, or they collectively understand what it is that they need and what they're going to go get now.
And what it costs to get, too, which is an important component of this. The value has been there in a lot of these. Like, sure, you don't love giving a linebacker what they gave Okereke, but he fills a clear need. It's about market value. You swallow it. You don't feel great about it, but that was a really glaring need. You could not go into the season with 6th and 7th round picks and undrafted free agents and guys off the street as your interior linebackers next year. You couldn't do it. If you wanted to be a serious team, you couldn't do it. The value has been there, and that matters. For so long, the Giants did not care about value. It was about getting their guy at the wrong cost. You can get the right guy, and if they cost too much, it still sinks you. As fake as the NFL salary cap is, it does eventually come to get you. The Giants really felt it this year, especially this year where they had to restructure contracts just to fill out the roster on game day. So every last dollar does count. Even though the cap is made up for most teams, it does eventually matter. So the value lining up is the other part of that I wanted to throw in. Sorry for cutting you off. Go ahead.
No problem. So last year they drafted 11 players. 11 players added to the roster. They came into this year, drafted 7 players. So that's 18 players added in 2 years. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you have, what, 7 draft picks a year. They've essentially added 9 players per year if you do the law of average.
Yeah.
So 18 players in 2 years is a lot, man. That's a lot.
it speaks to how bad the bottom half of the roster was when Joe Shane and Co. got here. They had to fill out basically, you know, you think about that Giants roster at the end of that last season when Joe Judge was the coach, that 53-man roster. You think about Jake Fromm playing quarterback. You think about some of the guys who were getting PT in that secondary. They had to turn over the entire bottom half of the roster. You dress 53 on game day, and then you have your 10 practice squad guys. You'll have 90 in training camp. Yeah, 18 draft picks is, you know, about a third of your game day, a little less than a third of your game day roster. That's a significant amount of turnover, and just speaks to how bad a situation it was when they got here.
Talk about the back end of your roster. Let's talk about day three. They had a fifth round pick, a sixth round pick, two sevenths. Eric Gray, the running back out of Oklahoma. One of the things that's very unique or very interesting about day three is, to me, it's all about traits. It's all about upside. The hit rate on fifth, sixth, and seventh guys is so low that you just want to bring guys in that have certain traits that you like, that are able to, that you think you're able to develop into something. One of the things I really liked about these day three guys, more so than last year, was the emphasis seemed to be on guys that, okay, traits, development, but their immediate impact. What can their immediate impact be? Special teams.
Nick, oh yeah, we've been you and I bitch about the special teams a lot.
It cost them a couple of games last year.
Yeah,
it cost them one game. I think it cost them multiple games. But Eric Gray can contribute on special teams. Trey Hawkins, the corner out of Old Dominion, can contribute on special teams. Javarius Owens, their seventh round pick out of Houston, can contribute on special teams. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I didn't watch any Old Dominion football last year. I didn't watch any Houston University football. I watched Houston University basketball, but I didn't watch Houston University football last year. I don't know what these guys are going to develop into, but when you look at people that sit there and they watch film, you listen to what they say, collectively, on all these guys the Giants drafted, there was one common denominator, two common denominators. Number one, they believe these guys can all play special teams. They all have a position on special teams. Some of them played significant special team snaps at college, in college. Number two was the upside to potentially be a starting caliber player. That's what I loved.
You don't even need starters. Just even rotational guys. Yeah, and the fifth through seventh is great.
When you're drafting these later rounds, like I said, it's you start drafting by need. Oh, I need to go get a linebacker. That's when you start to miss on guys. I think the number one thing you do on day three, especially when you get toward the sixth and seventh round, is it's all about traits. It's all about upside. It's all about development. And I think the Giants did that. It was pretty important to them to make sure that they get players in the building that can play special teams, because last year, while everyone was harping on the special teams coach, Thomas McGahee, he needs to get fired. I'm not saying he shouldn't have, but what I'm saying is they didn't have guys that could play special teams. And that's what the ultimate detriment was to special teams, in my opinion, rather than just coaching.
Oh, 100%. You got to fill out the bottom half. You think about it. You think about Gary Brightwell.
But it's not just filling out the bottom half. You got to fill out the bottom half with guys that can play special teams. Because ultimately, this is. You know, your wide receiver five or your running back three, he might get one or two carries or six or seven snaps on offense. But these guys, they're playing. If they're active on game day, they're playing special teams.
Oh, 100%, 100%. You got, and that's the part of it. You got to have guys who can do that, because the Giants have treated, aside from Graham Gano, special teams has been pretty meh for the last couple of years. It's been treated as a throwaway, and that speaks to how dire the roster was, that they had guys who should have been special teamers playing regular snaps, so they had to have other guys on special teams or guys who were on the field for offense or defense play special teams too. It's all interconnected, and it's really important that they take special teams seriously, because it's a phase of the game game where if you have good coaching like the Giants do, you can use special teams to your advantage for the game situation stuff about playing field position and clock management in a way they haven't been able to the last couple of years. That's a wrinkle to this. And yeah, traits are the way to go in the bottom half of the draft. You always want guys who are really twitchy. You want guys who are fast, guys who are athletic, rangy, can jump high, all that kind of gimmicky stuff just to get them in the door. And then if you can refine another one of those traits and you give them two or three good traits and you can scheme them up a little bit and protect them to play to their strengths, what they're good at athletically, all of a sudden you got a good rotational pass rusher or a good rotational corner, or you got a good nickel corner, you've got a good third safety. That stuff matters. When you are in today's NFL, you got to have four or five defensive backs you can have all on the field at once. And then you need two more just in case something happens to one of those first five. That's coming from this part of the draft, the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. Those guys who are going to get on the field sparingly, going to play special teams, hopefully not make a lot of mistakes. There's stuff to be encouraged about here, and you feel great. That's the biggest takeaway I have now is I don't worry like, oh my God, what are they doing? Why did they take this tackle who is very slow and has terrible footwork and this and that? And now we're all, okay, I understand what they're doing. It's very clear what they value and what they prioritize. I'm excited for training camp. I'm excited for the Tommy DeVito show.
Oh, absolutely. Tommy DeVito, we'll talk about him. I absolutely love the fact that they signed him. I actually, when I was doing a mock draft, I just took him for fun in the seventh round just because of his name. But yeah, I'm with you, man. Day three, I mean, you just traits, upside, and ability to play special teams. That and obviously, if the value meets the need, then you're golden. But that's the draft class. And my biggest takeaway is the first three rounds, I believe 2, 3, 4 years from now, we'll look back on this draft and say, yeah, the Giants absolutely hit on round 1, 2, and 3. And oh, by the way, some of those back end guys that they took in the 5th, 6th, 7th round, yeah, that one guy stuck around as a depth piece. And, you know, now he's potentially signing with another team and the Giants get a comp pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, just we look back on this draft as a beneficial draft. But that's the draft. Let's talk about UDFAs. And the big name for everyone is the West Virginia wide receiver, Bryce Ford Wheaton. There was an interesting article that I read about Bryce Ford Wheaton, where a coach told him that on certain plays, you look like Calvin Johnson. And on other plays, you just look like you don't belong in the NFL. Now, that's a pretty, I mean, if a coach tells me that, that's just, I'd be like, what am I doing that's making me look like Calvin Johnson, right? Very excited about this signing. This is probably the most exciting signing. I thought he was going to get drafted. I thought he was going to get drafted in like the 4th or 5th round. 6'4", 211, ran a 4.3. One of the things about this draft that I put it out there was a Joe Shane raster class, because that RAS scores on some of these prospects are just all like green, 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 green. Very excited about that. Another one that I looked at that I was very excited about was when they signed Michigan corner Gamon Green. Gamon Green, at one point, I watched a lot of Big Ten football. He was considered the best cover corner at Michigan this past year. And the Giants getting him as a UDFA, just another guy you add to the mix. Potential practice squad guy, we'll see. But and then Tommy DeVito. I mean, that third preseason game where he throws for like 280 and two touchdowns, and he's throwing touchdowns to, you know, Mekhi Polk and Khalil Pimpton, and Bryce Ford Wheaton is establishing himself to make the 53-man roster. Like, that's what I'm looking forward to, that hot night in August in the Meadowlands, Tommy DeVito game-winning drive. Talk to me, Nick.
Oh, hey, man. I've as a true college football sicko, I'm intimately aware of the actions of Illinois and Syracuse football. I have watched a lot of Tommy DeVito play football over the last 5 years because I'm a real college sicko. I'm excited. Hey, man, anytime you get one of these project-y quarterbacks who's either like a 6th, 7th round guy or a UDFA, you know he's going to get in the preseason. The crowd is going to go the 8,000 people that are still in the game that haven't left yet when he gets in are all going to go nuts. We're all going to talk about, oh, is he going to be dressed on certain game days? Is he going to get activated? Is he going to make the team? All of this kind of stuff. It's fun. It's silly. That's what's great about the quarterbacks that are undrafted or late picks like this is nobody expects anything out of any of them. You remember the jokes. You remember the college football, them playing college football. You think about like the example of this is like Trace McSorley getting into all these games for the Cardinals or the Ravens. Everybody remembers Trace McSorley at Penn State. They remember him in the Rose Bowl against Sam Darnold. It's a novelty to see him out there. If I see a Syracuse quarterback suiting up for the Giants on an NFL Sunday, they're either so far out of it it doesn't matter, or it means the starting quarterback is hurt and they're screwed anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So not just the Syracuse quarterback,
a Don Bosco Prep alum.
Oh yes.
Bergen County.
Yeah, Don Bosco is like 30 minutes from my house. I have a few
He actually was recruited by Maryland too. I do remember that they were recruiting him. Listen, Tommy DeVito. If Tommy DeVito doesn't excite you about the preseason,
you ain't alive.
Nah, you ain't enjoying life, man. Because I cannot wait for Tommy DeVito in the preseason. I'm very, very excited. But yeah, the UDFA class is encouraging. Bryce Ford Wheaton. I think everybody's looking forward to watching him in the preseason. That quote from that coach telling him that you either are Calvin Johnson or you don't belong on a football field, like that to me, that's wild for a coach to tell him that. That's some of the stuff you read on social media, right?
I was going
to
say, that's some shit yeah. I would say. I would tweet that at somebody. Yeah. I would tweet at Daniel Jones. You look like either Auburn Cam Newton or you look like you shouldn't be playing professional football. That's something right. I would say.
Right, right. That was wild when I saw that. Kind of got me more excited. But yeah, that's the NFL draft. That's the Giants UDFAs. Last thoughts before we wrap this up.
I am very excited. I have such a morbid curiosity for what is going to happen to the New York Jets this year. Like Aaron Rodgers has been at Madison Square Garden, I think 4 days in a row now. Every night, Rangers and Knicks, he has been making sure that everybody knows I'm in New York now. Come say hello. I looked at that skill position group. Other than Garrett Wilson, that receiving room stinks. We're talking about Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb. Like they have no tight ends.
People are basically calling it the Green Bay receiving room, where it's like
he spent his entire career in Green Bay complaining about the skill positions, and he's like, I want you to bring all my boys. Where's Mercedes Lewis? Jets couldn't get Mercedes Lewis in the cut either. That's the thing, man.
Garrett Wilson's playing the role of Davante Adams, where he's going to get like 20 targets a game.
Oh, like, yeah. Garrett Wilson is going to be amazing this year. Garrett Wilson was great last year with Joe Flacco and Zach Wilson. Garrett Wilson might go for 2,100 yards and like 200 catches this year. And like, that's only slightly hyperbole. That's the only guy who's going to be able to get open. Alan Lazard is there to run block, and Randall Cobb doesn't move anymore. I don't know if anybody watched him in Dallas. He's done.
Their ability to their inability to really shore up their offensive line, man, that what happened to them what Belichick did to him was just so. I mean, he moved back like four spots and got a fourth round pick, like he could have easily said no, you know. But I just think he knew Pittsburgh was coming up for that tackle, and I'm interested to see how it plays out with the Jets. But before we go, I see you still have the Rangers jersey hanging behind you. First of all, I don't watch hockey like that, but wasn't the expectation for the Rangers
this year? They were supposed to win the Stanley Cup this year, yeah. They went all in this year trying to win the Stanley Cup. They traded for the big-name guys at the deadline. And colossal failure. And it's okay to lose to a good team in the first round, to be up 2-0 and then get shut out in 2 of the 4 games you lose, that's just unacceptable. The coach is going to wear it. I don't think he's a particularly good coach, but he's going to get the brunt of the blame because it's easier to replace the coach than it is the entire lineup.
Are the Rangers far and away the second biggest failure of the hockey season this year outside of the Boston Bruins?
Probably, yeah. Honestly, wow. I mean, because the Leafs got out of the first round, so everybody didn't get fired there. And
fucking Ethan is not here, man. I was going to go after him over John T. He's not here.
It's fine. Ethan doesn't even really care about John Tavares anymore. Yeah,
bullshit. Guy just constantly is talking about him. I see it on my timeline every day. Yeah, it was, and then to lose to the Devils,
The Devils are a good team. Like, I will be fair. The Devils were better than the Rangers the entire regular season. They had, I think, 8 or 9 more points in the standings. The Devils are a really good team. I would have been okay with losing to the Devils. Losing the way they did to the Devils is why it feels like such a flop.
Because they got shut out in Game 7 too, right?
They got shut out in Game 7 and in Game 5. They got shut out in 2 of the 4 games they lost in the series. And then in the other 2 games they lost, they scored 1 goal in each of those. They lost 1 game 2-1 and then another one 4-1. That's all they had to show for the games they lost. They played really well the first 2 games and then just nothing left.
Wow. Could be worse. Could be like the Yankees who sit in the basement of New York sports.
Everybody's hurt, though. That's different. Your 2 best offensive players, Stanton and Judge, are hurt. Your 2nd best pitcher's hurt. You got Cole, who's going to win the Cy Young. Yankees will be fine. The Yankees will be fine. They'll make the playoffs.
They'll be fine on the standard of a Mets fan, not fine on the standard of a Yankees fan.
It is 2023. The rest of the league has caught up.
This is what we did with the Giants. You have, we lower expectations,
because the standards across the league have changed. It's not just that the Yankees aren't good anymore. The rest of the league has caught up. Better teams are out there. This is not
a problem. That's a problem for the Yankees to figure out. That's not a situation where you say, well, we just lower our standards and we have to accept the fact that we're the same as the Tampa Bay Rays or we're the same as the San Diego Padres or all these other teams. No.
The Padres have like a bazillion dollar payroll. The Padres have the best 1-4 in baseball if they all actually start hitting. If Soto, Tatis, Bogarts get going,
They can afford it, why can't the Yankees?
Well, the Yankees have money tied up in okay, I was doing this math earlier. Stanton, Judge, Cole, Rodon. That's $115 million right there. Okay.
And we guys. Applauded them. Again, you don't see me bringing up Carlos Rodon. The injuries, listen, that's out of the Yankee control. I'm talking about the bats.
They spend money to keep Rizzo. They have these in-house guys. They like Volpe. They like Peraza. They got to play.
Okay.
What? Right. So what? You're upset they didn't like go get Brian Reynolds to play left field instead of Aaron Hicks?
Absolutely. Yes. That was a weakness for them. Aaron Hicks could not be in the lineup this year after what happened last year. And what do they do? Same thing with Donaldson. They had to get rid of him. You can't bring that person back. Do you not remember the Astros series? He was it was a joke. He looked like me in the batter's box. Swinging, just it didn't even look like a professional baseball player. So don't even say, well, go get Reynolds. Absolutely. He wanted to come here. The Pirates were ready to make a deal. So what if you have to give up one of your – are you trying to win now? Or are you trying to just continue this bullshit farm system and try to sell yourself? Look at how many great
Look across baseball right now. You think about the teams that have been consistently good for the last 10 to 15 years. You're talking the Dodgers, the Astros, those two teams. What are the backbones of those teams that won championships? The Astros is all internal guys or guys they traded for before they got to the big leagues. Their best player right now, Yordan Alvarez, was a Dodger prospect. They identified him and they went and got him. The Yankees need their prospects to hit. Is different.
Stop. You don't get to rewrite history on me, okay?
That's not rewriting history. Alvarez is the best player on the Astros right now. Yes.
Yes, he is.
Or Kyle Tucker, an in-house guy.
Excuse me. They won a World Series by being aggressive and getting Justin Verlander and then getting Gerrit Cole. Am I right or am I wrong?
Gerrit Cole wasn't on the team that won the World Series. They went to the World Series, but they lost.
Right. Okay. I give you that. But they went out and got Justin Verlander, right?
Yeah. The Yankees went out and got Rodon. They need him to be healthy. Rodon right now is arguably the best or second best left-handed pitcher in all of baseball when he's healthy. When he's healthy, it's May. You can start worrying mid-June. If they are still in
fourth. You keep saying we can start worrying in mid-June. This has been a worry since last year or before last year. Like, all of a sudden, the Josh Donaldson problem started this year. The Aaron Hicks problem started this year. This is a reoccurring thing, okay? And we can't keep sitting here constantly saying it's early. It's not early. This is 2 years into it. you went all in on Aaron Judge, $300 million. You didn't pay a guy $300 million or $400 million because you got a farm system of players that are going to be good and might be good in 3 years. You got to go all in. And when they didn't go all in,
I got Jason Dominguez in my dynasty league. He's going to be good.
Okay. All right. Look, I like you. All right. I don't want my blood pressure to go up on the Yankees. The Giants had a great draft, I thought.
Yes, they did.
All about the process. The Knicks tied the series last night. The Garden is absolutely electric.
That was a rock fight last night. That was an ugly basketball game.
This series is going to be a rock fight. This series is going to be a rock fight. This is old school. Both of these Eastern Conference series are going to be a rock, absolute dog, you know, physical fight. And now Embiid's back. That's huge for the Sixers. But I was going to say, I think the Garden is the best arena for a basketball game by far. I don't give a shit
the
about
the only arena.
I don't give a shit about old man Jack Nicholson coming and sitting.
No, I wasn't going to say Staples. I wasn't going to say Staples. The old Warriors arena was loud as hell. Oracle, that arena is the only one that was ever as loud as the Garden.
Yeah, that was loud. But the Garden, because the thing what's special about the Garden is, you know, what separates it from Staples Center or Crypto Arena is because, you know, these snobby Hollywood elites, they don't get up and cheer like that. Like the guys in the Garden, man. Like you see Spike Lee, Jon Stewart, you know, Pete Davidson, all these guys just getting up. You know, used to be Jerry Seinfeld, just getting up and just celebrating their ass off like real diehard Knicks fans. You don't see that in Staples Center, even when Kobe and Shaq was throwing it down. I am praying that a superstar becomes disgruntled this offseason.
Hey, Gildas Alexander, you want to go to the Met Gala every year? You want to walk down the street to the Met Gala? Come to the Knicks.
Yeah, I was actually – I was hoping – when probably not going to happen now, but if the Heat had lost, Jimmy Butler becomes available. But then I remember Tom Thibodeau coaches the Knicks, and that's never going to happen. But, yeah, I'm praying a superstar becomes disgruntled because Knicks fans, I'm telling you, you are right on the precipice of championship contention. I truly believe that.
Oh, I think the Knicks are going to have a real shot. They can hang with the Celtics the way the Celtics have played so far these playoffs.
Do not write off the Sixers. Do not write off the Sixers yet.
Oh, I was going to say, and I think they can hang with the Sixers. I think Embiid is going to average like 40 and 20 every game, but they can hang with the Sixers.
Yeah, it's a fun time in New York, man.
If
you're a Yankee fan, it's just, you know, you kind of live in the basement for a little bit. But anyways, that's our show. Recap the draft. New York sports flying high. We'll be back soon, maybe.
Oh yeah.
If not, have a good summer. We'll talk to you in August, maybe. I don't know. But yeah.
He hit y'all with the Hags like he's signing yearbooks out here. He said, have a great summer.
Before we go, just got a breaking news alert on my phone. GM Joe Shane makes changes to personnel and scouting staff. Marcus Cooper will be the Giants national scout. Blaze Bell will be an area scout. Marquise Pendleton, a pro scout, and Justin Marcus will become the team's scout and BLESTO scouting combine. So nothing big, but the Giants made it seem that way with a big capital letter type thing. But anyways, that's our show, and we'll talk again soon. Peace.